Welcome to the View My Seats podcast with John Lord. My guest this episode, Brian McPherson, is the Red Sox beat writer for the Providence Journal, whose recent piece on minor league baseball takes a look at the economic challenges facing the majority of professional baseball players. Brian, welcome to the View My Seats podcast, and thanks for joining me.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Garrett Brushhouse, the pitcher turned lawyer representing the 34 plaintiffs in the lawsuit against various Major League Baseball parties, calls the current minor league system a meat market and the true commoditization of human beings. How does he justify these claims, and is a major change on the horizon?
A major change could be on the horizon. So Brushhouse has filed suit against Major League Baseball on behalf of 34 former players. And if a major change could be in the offing, either in the form of a decision or a settlement, there's no trial immediately on the horizon. They're in the discovery phase here at this point. But, I mean, the point being that the basic labor laws that apply to most Americans at this point have not applied to minor league baseball players. And minor league baseball players are your classic, you know, teenagers, early 20s kids pursuing a dream. And, you know, that sets them up to potentially be exploited. I mean, there's another class of, you know, teenagers coming out of Latin America where, you know, that's, you know, certainly American minimum wage is an enormous amount of money to them, and they're not getting that, but, you know, even less than minimum wage is acceptable to them, so that sets them up to be exploited too, you know, to not be paid minimum wage, which in most industries in this country is illegal. So these players are paid sub-minimum wage salaries during the season. They're not paid in the off season. They're not paid. I'm down at spring training now. They're not paid other than per diem for food. They're not paid for spring training, which is really fascinating. Something I didn't know until I started looking into this story. So basically the guys in AAA are essentially making $10,000 a year, $21.50 a month. The guys at the lower levels are making less. And, you know, that includes responsibilities for spring training, fall instructional leagues, workout programs in the off season. They have to be able to pick up and go whenever their team trades them or reassigns them or anything like that. They can't seek new employment, you know, like the rest of us can. If, you know, in my newspaper, I felt like I could get a better deal elsewhere, I could search for one. You know, if I felt like I could get a better beat or more money or anything like that, I could go look for a job elsewhere. Whereas these players, you know, as has been the case, as was the case in Major League Baseball for a very long time, are tied to their team. And there's limits on that, but it takes 6 years. 6-7 years after you sign before you are able to go seek employment elsewhere. And if you've signed as a 21-year-old out of college, basically by the time you're free, you're not a prospect anymore. So, you know, that one organization is your only shot, and they basically hold all power over you. So that's when he talks about commoditization of human beings. It's these players being treated less as people and more as, yeah, commodities that they can just be used and disposed of and held on to for depth purposes, even if that's not in that particular player's best interest, and not necessarily even be paid very well for the privilege, despite, you know, the industry being as profitable as it is. So it's a really fascinating issue. I'm sure Major League Baseball is taking it very seriously, and it could be a major landscape change, you know, even if you're talking about, you know, players eventually being paid $50,000 a year, you know, a decent salary that allows them to focus solely on baseball. You know, that's a ton of money given the number of minor leaguers that Major League Baseball would wind up having to pay.
So my next question has to be then, how does Major League Baseball justify this current system? It sounds like a clear-cut case of exploitation. You look at the numbers, and it's pretty hard to see how they make the calculus work for them, because you've painted a pretty clear picture, and so has Brushhouse, as far as the amount of time that these part-time employees put into their craft is much more than just a part-time job. So how does Major League Baseball make sense of the numbers currently?
Well, the weird thing about American labor law is that not everyone is entitled to minimum wage, and there are various loopholes and carve-outs in the minimum wage laws that go back to the Great Depression and the New Deal, when these laws were first put into place. And it's evolved over time, but the big one is seasonal workers. The big one is, you know, if you look at baseball as a seasonal occupation, that the season is 5 months long for minor league players, April to August, essentially, and a little bit into September, but not really. That these guys, that it's the seasonal occupation. And you think of something like a summer camp counselor. You know, this is sort of the the parallel that Major League Baseball would have to try and draw is that, you know, summer camp counselors aren't paid minimum wage necessarily because you're basically on duty 24 hours. You know, you're not getting paid overtime. You're not getting paid minimum wage. You're just finding there's a weekly salary, but you can't adhere. You can't like punch in and out as a summer camp counselor. Or if you're, right. And also they've decided that, you know, if you're working at, you know, Six Flags for the summer, and Six Flags is year round, but something like that that's only open uh-huh. for the summer, you know, that you don't have to pay minimum wage and overtime to those sorts of seasonal employers. So that's been what Major League Baseball has used on top of its antitrust exemption that it used to defend the reserve clause for a long time. So there are legal there have been lawsuits by groundskeepers and entity and parties like that have not been successful. But certainly Brushhouse and his clients are going to portray this as minor leaguers are employed year-round. They're under contract year-round. Baseball conducts business year-round. I mean, spring training is a business. They charge admission to games. And players are required to take part in off-season activities. It's not like their contracts expire at the end of September, say, and they can go do whatever they want. It's hard to go get, you know, if you're a true seasonal employee, you can go get a part-time job. You know, even if it's not ideal, like, you know, go work at a hardware store, go wait tables. You know, that's what actors and actresses in Hollywood do, is that when you don't have a gig, you know, you go wait tables. And these guys, it's difficult to do because they have to still be responsive to their team. They still have to do these workout programs. You know, certainly there's, you know, some of these guys talk about, you know, 4, 5, 6 hours a day in the off season. You know, you do your lifting, you do your throwing, all these things that help you actually succeed to try and get to the major leagues where the money is. That's the challenge. I think eventually, potentially, a judge could have to decide, is minor league baseball a seasonal and recreational activity, or is it basically full-time employment?
Brian, and it seems like the minor league baseball players would have a lot more rights if they were able to collectively bargain their contracts, but there is no players union for minor league baseball. Why is that?
There's a lot of different challenges, and yeah, that was interesting to explore too, because minor league hockey players have a union, and that came about in the 70s and has gradually increased in power. I mean, it's not like they're getting millions of dollars, but they're getting a living wage. They're getting, I think, at the AHL level, basically the AAA level, their average salary is around $90,000, and at the lower level, the average salary is, you know, more like $30,000 or $40,000. But they also have, the team provides their housing, which is a big an important thing, and, you know, in all these sports where you move around trying to find housing. You know, one of the pictures Brushhouse painted was just living in terrible housing while he was playing in Connecticut, and, you know, he just couldn't afford anything else. Guys are living on air mattresses because you're trying to save any sort of money you can. Whereas in hockey, these guys, through their union, have negotiated the right to basically a furnished apartment, and teams provide a furnished apartment. It's a lifestyle befitting. One of the players I talked to sort of described it's a lifestyle befitting a professional athlete. And minor league baseball players, you know, living on air mattresses in sparsely furnished apartments because you just can't afford anything else, you know, that's not really the life befitting a professional athlete. So I guess to answer your question, the challenge with Major League Baseball is there's a lot of challenges. The big one is, even though there's laws protecting, you know, employees from retribution, if they want to form a union or want to bargain collectively, it's still intimidating to be that guy to stand up for your rights when you're 21 years old and you want to get to the major leagues because you've dreamt about that since you were 5. And to worry about labor laws, you know, what these guys tend to do is put their head down and focus on what they're trying to do. You know, the big saying, you know, whenever they're, you know, these overnight bus trips or whatever it is, people say, don't like it, play better. That's their motto. Don't like it, play better. And if you play better, you get to the major leagues, and you don't have to worry about anything when you get to the major leagues. So that's part of it. Part of it, too, is the diverse collection that you have. You know, it's difficult, especially these guys from Latin America. That's an especially challenging group to, you know, to discuss nuances of American labor law when you're coming over at 17 years old, or even as you come up and you're 20 years old, to be talking about labor law and unionization and all these things. Those guys especially just want to put their head down and play because they're trying to provide for entire families. You know, the American kids, a lot of them come from affluent families and are doing okay. They're not trying to send money home. A lot of times they're actually, it's the opposite. Their parents are supporting them. But the kids from Latin America, the ones who are most apt to be exploited, you know, to have them look at this as, you know, from a legal perspective, you know, when English is their second language, it's incredibly difficult. And then everybody scatters to all corners of the world after the season anyway. So there's a lot of challenges. You know, different people, including Brushhouse, have kind of talked about this with teammates and tried to make things happen, but to this point it hasn't happened, and the Major League Baseball Players Association, which you would think would be able to facilitate this and make it a little easier and, you know, help convince some of these younger guys that maybe they could get a better deal if they bargain collectively with Major League Baseball, Minor League Baseball, so far has shown little interest in kind of taking up that fight.
Well, I think you said it, and the problem for why Minor League Baseball players can't bring about any kind of change while they're still playing is the fact that, by and large, minor leaguers are replaceable. And certainly Major League Baseball benefits from the idea that very few of those minor leaguers are actually going to make it. And so you have this system, this perpetual system, where since very few baseball players are gonna make it into the big leagues, Major League Baseball doesn't really need all of those players to stick around because they can find other people to fill rosters. And so I wonder how much of this system is because of the idea that, by and large, Major League Baseball looks at minor league players as replaceable commodities.
Oh, that's a lot of it, absolutely. And that's why the hockey example was so fascinating to me, because that's one thing I've thought about, is the reason major leaguers were able to bargain collectively effectively back in the 70s and 80s when they, you know, achieved free agency and basically paved the way for the riches they see now is because strikes worked. You know, when originally, you know, even a Willie Mays, who was on the tail end of his career, when he went out on strike or threatened strike or when there was a lockout and all these guys, you know, refused to play, that mattered. You know, that hit the owners in the pocketbook. That people were coming to these games, that mattered. You know, and replacement players wouldn't have worked. You know, you remember 94 and they talked about replacement players, and that was, it's not the same product. You know, it's not Ken Griffey Jr. and Tony Gwynn. You know, people aren't going to want to watch it. Whereas minor league baseball, people come for the experience. They come because they can watch a baseball game and have a beer and park for free and cheer on a team on a warm summer night with their family, and it costs them like $50 for the whole family, which is the price of one ticket at Fenway Park. You know, that's minor league baseball. And aside from the top prospects, you know, the draw is not the name on the back of the jersey. So you're right, they're replaceable. But that's why it was fascinating to see the hockey example, because it's the same thing in hockey. You know, minor league hockey, people aren't coming to see specific players. They're coming to get to see a hockey game at a pretty affordable price. But they still have managed to achieve, you know, living wage. And like I said, sort of a lifestyle that befits a professional athlete, albeit at the lower level, that, you know, if you can make $80,000 as a minor league hockey player, you're doing pretty well. They only get paid during the season as well, but what they get paid during the season is enough to, you know, tide them over through the off season. They're not living on air mattresses and doing those sorts of things. So even if the threat of a strike is not the same for minor leaguers as it would be for major leaguers because they're so replaceable, it does seem like there's a window for some improvement based on that hockey example.
Yeah, and to highlight this point about how minor league baseball players are replaceable, in your article in the Providence Journal, you talked about how in 2004 there were, I forget what the exact number is, but I think it was roughly 1,200 or so players in single A, and eventually 244 of those reached the majors. That's roughly 18-20% of the players that played in single A in 2004 go on to make it in Major League Baseball. That just shows you how slim the chances are for the majority of minor league baseball players. And the other thing that I found interesting is this story you reported on was also the focus of a Real Sports on HBO with Bryant Gumbel special. I think it was late last year, and Brushhouse was interviewed by John Frankel, and John Frankel in the piece mentioned how former Major League Baseball commissioner Faye Vincent said something along the lines of, the majority of minor league baseball players are just simply around to have a catch for the few guys who are going to make it. So that quote from Faye Vincent, I don't know if it's word for word, but that idea just kind of summarizes Major League Baseball's approach for most minor league baseball players, and might help explain why minor league baseball players are not treated fairly.
Yeah, and it's true, and that's why, I mean, Major League Baseball players make an extraordinary amount of money because they do what nobody else can. You know, people talk, you know, you hear, when people hear about these contracts, people always say, like, well, I'd do it for free. Well, there's a reason they don't want you to do it for free. There's a reason they're paying Dustin Pedroia $15 million a year to do it. It's because what he can do, very, very few people in the world can do, and minor league baseball players are much more skilled than the rest of us. But you're right. A lot of these guys, aside from the top prospects, really are just there so that the top prospects can play games. You know, that's the idea. They call them org players, organizational players that aren't really going to go anywhere, that are there so that everyone else can play. And one of the guys in the Red Sox, former Red Sox farmhand Ryan Corey, was one of the plaintiffs. He has kept a lower profile. He declined an interview, but he's a classic organizational player. He played at single A, double A, triple A, but he was just there. If somebody needed a second baseman, he played second base. If somebody needed a third baseman, he played third base. But if there was a prospect that needed to play, he wasn't going to play. And yeah, that's the big challenge, is that these guys are eminently replaceable. When he said, you know, I'm going to go home, then they just brought up the next guy, you know, who had a dream of playing the major leagues, even if it wasn't realistic. And yeah, he was completely replaceable. And that's why these labor laws exist. Because on the one hand, if you're looking as a totally free market, if these guys have little value, why should they be paid? You know, they should be paid whatever they're worth. But you know, we have labor laws and they apply to most. It's just like McDonald's workers, that obviously McDonald's workers are eminently replaceable. And that's why they only make minimum wage, but that's also why minimum wage exists. You know, that's why wage is there, and you know, like it or not, and I'm sure there's some debate about that, that's what the laws are. And you know, certainly minor league baseball players are going to be more skilled at what they do than your average McDonald's worker, and I think, you know, their hope is that they can get their protections of those minimum wages so that they're not exploited, you know, by the teams that don't necessarily see them as having a major league future.
It just sounds so obvious to us that the exploitation here is so glaring. The next logical question has to be, Brian, why is this subject pretty much hidden from public view? You know, you don't hear a lot of people talking about the exploitation of minor league baseball players. And you said it earlier, minor league baseball is incredibly profitable because it's affordable, it's family friendly, it's accessible. You know, we love going to minor league baseball games. But I just wonder why the general public isn't aware of this issue.
I mean, it's not a major league baseball's issue to publicize it, for one thing. And it's just some of these things people don't really know about. Like, I've been covering Major League Baseball for 5 or 6 years now, and really it was just this year that I became aware of just the extent to which these guys struggled financially. I remember last year talking to a former high draft pick who got, I believe, a 7-figure signing bonus, and he was still having trouble. Like, he was still having trouble getting an apartment to start the season because what was required to, I mean, he'd been in the minor leagues for several years now, so he'd kind of worked his way through that signing bonus a little, you know, especially given taxes and all that. And you come out, you haven't been paid all offseason, you haven't been paid for spring training, and now all of a sudden, you know, you move to an area and you've got to put down, you know, $1,000 security deposit and pay a first month's rent of $1,000. You know, all these things that go into getting set up with a place to live. And you know, these guys just don't have that sort of cash on hand. But I didn't know about this. I didn't know guys weren't paid during spring training. You just, you know, baseball players, and you assume they all make $1 million. And there's just not a lot of awareness. I think that's one thing. Brush House, you know, he's been ubiquitous. He's been around. You're seeing this get a lot more traction. Like you said, you know, HD's on it. There's been a lot of articles. I'm certainly not the first one to write this article. And you know, as awareness grows, I think you'll see some progress. I think that's part of, I guess what I'm saying is that's part of his goal, is not just necessarily to get a judgment. The awareness out there, you know, the more public pressure there is on Major League Baseball to treat its players, you know, with a reasonable level of fairness, and the more likely at some point it may happen even without a judge intervening.
Yeah, and it's, I think a lot of the reason why, Brian, the subject is not as well known by the public as it should be, has a lot to do with the fact that when we hear about a lot of minor league baseball players, we hear about the lavish money and the signings of the big name free agents. You know, the guys out of Cuba recently, you know, the other top, you know, first, second round draft picks that are paid fairly large, substantial signing bonuses. So those are the stories that are reported, and that's what we as a public hear. What's not reported is the fact that, you know, pretty much after you get out of the second round, or certainly after the 10th round, the guys that are drafted are not really receiving any kind of substantial signing bonus, and therefore they're going to have to live on this rather paltry salary for those few months that they're actually playing baseball. So I think that has something to do with why we as a public aren't more aware of the system.
Sure, you're absolutely right, and that's what makes the new restrictions on the draft even more fascinating, that the major leaguers basically bargained away a lot of signing bonuses for these minor league guys, that the ones who, you know, maybe used to get $100,000 to start, which at least, yeah, could could sort of tide somebody over if you're going to be in the minor leagues for 4 years. You know, that doesn't last very long, but at least it's something. But now these teams are limited on how much they can spend, but they still need to spend to get these hard-to-sign guys. You know, they scrimp where they can, so you're seeing a lot more guys just basically get nothing as signing bonuses coming out of college. So you're starting with nothing. You've been, you know, the NCAA is an entirely different discussion, but, you know, you've been playing college baseball maybe, and you're on half a scholarship, so you don't have any money in your pocket anyway. You haven't been able to save then. Your parents probably paid, you know, paid your tuition that you didn't, because college baseball players don't get full scholarships generally. So then you come out in the minor leagues and you're making 10 grand a year, and you're trying to figure out how to make this work. And that's where these guys are basically living in poverty. And that's, yeah, we hear about the big signing bonuses. We hear about the holdouts. We hear about all that. And certainly, you're not going to shed tears for somebody who, you know, wanted $5 million and only got $3 million. But those are the high profile ones because that, you know, that's what people naturally pay attention to. But yeah, anybody drafted outside the first couple of rounds is not getting that kind of money. And is then trying to, I mean, there's just, you look at how many rounds, you look at how many players, and yeah, you mentioned that ratio of, you know, guys who make the major leagues. Those are even the ones that, you know, just make it at all. You know, the guys who stick and make any kind of money there, the number's even smaller. Honestly, for that, I just went through and counted boldface names on Baseball Reference, which just meant, did this guy appear in a major league game or not? And, you know, there are plenty of guys who come up for a cup of coffee and go back down again. And yeah, there's a lot of players who just never taste the riches that Major League Baseball has to offer. And certainly, you know, you're not looking to level the playing field. The guys who are the best should make the most money. And, you know, nobody's begrudging, you know, the best players in the world, the Mike Trouts, for making what they make because they have a talent and an ability and they work at it. It's extraordinary and they should be compensated for what they can do. But, you know, that's, you know, in a country that has a minimum wage, it's you know, I talked to, you know, a law school dean about this, that it's a tough sell to say that even though we have exceptions to minimum wage laws, it's a tough sell to say these minor league baseball players, especially given how lucrative the industry is, should be exempt from those laws.
Right, and it is an incredibly lucrative business. Baseball is, I think, did you have this in your piece? Isn't it a $9 billion a year business, essentially?
I think that's the estimate. It's certainly up around there.
So the question is it just greed? Is it greed on the part of Major League Baseball owners? Is it greed on the part of Minor League Baseball owners? Could Minor League Baseball owners be doing a little bit more for their players if they wanted to? I guess there's no financial incentive for them or legal incentive for them to do anything different.
Yeah, well, I should clarify, minor league baseball players, owners aren't the ones paying the money. These are all major league baseball paychecks, and this is the lawsuits generally against major league baseball because they're the ones that employ the players. The minor league team owners, I mean, you could sort of tell this by the fact that major league teams shuttle these guys around as much as they do, but the minor league owners basically provide the facilities, and the major league teams provide the rest, and they pay the players. So this is about major league baseball, which is obviously where most of the money is anyway.
Right.
But yeah, to answer your question, these are very wealthy, you know, the owners are very wealthy people, and they didn't get wealthy by paying money they didn't have to. You know, when you hire somebody in a business, you know, you pay them the highest, I guess you generally pay someone the lowest salary you can while keeping them. And if somebody else wants that person, you know, you think of any other line of work, I just, you know, my own in newspapers that, you know, if somebody else wanted to hire me for a $10,000 raise, then my business would have to say, well, do we want to pay him $10,000 more or do we let him go? But until I come to them with that, they have little reason, you know, to offer me $10,000 more. They're not going to just do it out of the goodness of their heart. That's not how business works. So at this point, nobody has compelled Major League Baseball to pay these guys anymore. And because they're so replaceable, you know, if a guy says, you know what, I can't do this anymore, I retire, like I'm going to go, you know, get a real estate license and become a realtor because I can't. You know, I'm 28 years old and I have a wife and we want to have a family and I can't do it on, you know, $10,500 a year, then they'll say, well, thanks for your contribution, see you later, and they'll call up the next guy. So, you know, until there's something that compels them, and that's why this lawsuit's been filed, you know, either through collective bargaining or the legal system, you know, there's no reason for it to happen.
And it's far-fetched to think that we're all of a sudden going to stop going to minor league baseball games, but let's just say that this story does start to spread and more people are aware of the financial burden facing a lot of these minor league baseball players, and people stopped showing up to minor league stadiums because, you know, they didn't want to support a system that really exploits the workers, the players. If change were to occur sometime soon to the minor league baseball pay system, what do you think? You've kind of alluded to it earlier, but what do you think would be the concrete changes that would be first made here to the minor league pay system?
I mean, I think there's minimum salaries that I think you would see. I think minor leaguers would be happy with that if there was some sort of either collectively bargained agreement or something compelling to say, here's an estimated hours during the year that you're actually working, that your team is requiring you to work. You know, it's probably salaried, it's not hourly. You know, a lot of people work salary jobs where you don't actually count the number of hours you work. But the idea is there's an estimate there, and they expect you to work a certain number of hours a week, and they pay you accordingly. So if that's, you know, even if it's $35,000 a year, you know, some of these guys that I've talked to, they're not expecting to be rich playing in single A. You know, that's not the idea. The idea is to not have to sleep on an air mattress with four other guys in a two-bedroom apartment. And that's, you know, getting paid, you know, $35,000 a year or $50,000 a year, whatever it is, some sort of reasonable minimum salary. Just like in the major leagues, there's a minimum salary of $500,000, and in every other professional league, you know, in minor league hockey, there's a minimum salary, and some guys get the minimum, some guys get more. I think that's, you know, that might be the only thing that you see, but I think that would be enough for a lot of guys. I think a lot of these players would like to be able to, you know, get out of their organization if they want. If, you know, if they're in an organization with six center fielders and they're number six on the list, you know, there's other places where you might have a better shot. But I don't see that happening anytime soon. That seems too ingrained in the system at this point. But, you know, just the minor pay bump, I think, would be enough. At this point, there are minimum salaries at these levels. You know, that $21.50 for AAA, that's the minimum salary. There's just no reason for them to pay more. So if the minimum monthly salary suddenly was, you know, I don't know, $8,000 for those 5 months, all of a sudden you're making $40,000 a year, and, you know, that's at least livable, you know, because we're not just talking about 19-year-olds who can sleep on the air mattresses. We're talking about that 28-year-old who's trying to stick it out. And, you know, if you're 28 and married, and certainly it's tough for your wife to get a job because, you know, either she stays somewhere else and thus you have to live in two different places, or she comes with you and, you know, she could have to pick up and go anytime. You know, it's just not feasible for somebody who's trying to start a family. So I think that's probably where you would see the first start, is that some sort of increase in the minimum wage for these minor leaguers to match, or to at least get them to a level where they can feel comfortable and not. I mean, some of it seems like it would make sense for teams to do this, that for these guys not to have to worry about money, for them to not have to eat at McDonald's, you know, for them to eat decent food and have time to work out and not spend their off season, you know, waiting tables or working at a hardware store, you know, focused on baseball. Because ideally, you know, the better these guys are at baseball, the more they work at their craft, the better they'll be. The problem is that there's so many of these guys, these organizational players, that, you know, they can work as hard as they want. They're still not getting the major leagues. So, you know, the team has little reason to invest in them that much.
And if you did invest more, perhaps over the short and long term, you would end up improving your product, which would just, in my mind, increase attendance to minor league games even more. But kind of related to this issue about paying minor league baseball players, working for the Providence Journal, you've covered the recent sale of the Pawtucket Red Sox, the Boston Red Sox AAA affiliate in Providence, Rhode Island, to a group. One of the leaders of the group, I believe, is Red Sox CEO Larry Lucchino. And one of the things that we're hearing about this sale of the Paw Sox is that they're hoping to move the team from Pawtucket down to a new stadium along the river in downtown Providence. And this issue here kind of speaks to the very crux of the issue facing minor league baseball players, which is that minor league baseball is popular in part because it's an amusement. And that new park that they're talking about building in Providence is going to have all the 21st century frills that bring families out to the ballpark nowadays. So it's not necessarily about the product on the field as much as what surrounds them.
Yeah, and then you get into the issues of the public money involved. There's all sorts of complications with that. But yeah, you're right that the very issue that they're selling, the new owners of the team are selling the idea of a new stadium as sort of a new crown jewel in the Providence skyline, then, you know, be alongside the highway, so you see the lights on at night, and, you know, Providence seems like a happening city because there's things going on at night because there's a ball game. It's absolutely minor league baseball. It's an institution, and that's why teams, Major League and Minor League, are able to extract money from communities because Rhode Island doesn't want to lose their minor league team, whether it's in Pawtucket or Providence. That's part of their identity. So, it's a really important, part of a lot of civic communities, and that's why the PawSox move is such a big deal. And you're right, that's why minor league baseball, that's why it's a $9 billion industry, is because people care about this stuff. People want to have a team in their town. They want to go to the games. They'll pay money to do that. They'll watch it on TV. They'll listen on the radio. So that's why there's so much money involved in the industry in the first place.
Yeah, and it really is one of those examples of it's not necessarily about the product on the field as much as it is selling the experience, and that's what the new stadium in downtown Providence would be. Unfortunately, what you'd end up losing is the great history of a place like Pawtucket and the history of Pawtucket baseball. Really, you'd never be able to get that back, so the Red Sox certainly, it's understandable why they would want to look for a new minor league stadium, and the business side of it makes sense, but certainly from a nostalgia side, I'm personally sad to see the PawSox potentially leaving their old haunts. Quick last question, Brian, about the big club, the big league club, the Boston Red Sox. You're down in Florida right now covering the Red Sox in spring training, and just one simple question: what would you say gives the Red Sox the most hope this year that 2015 is going to be different than 2014?
I guess the big thing that would potentially make this year different is the fact that the offense is better. Hanley Ramirez and Pablo Sandoval in the middle of the lineup. But the big thing that gives them hope that they can make a run and they can do this force to first again is just how mediocre the American League is, and specifically the American League East. Is that the Yankees, barely avoided finishing below 500 last year. They could well finish. They're not better. They're relying on a starting rotation full of guys with injury questions. Half their, their lineup is old. It's not a very good team, and there's not reinforcements coming. Tampa Bay Rays have lost a lot, including their manager, but they don't have David Price anymore. The pitching pipeline that they had, it doesn't seem the guys they pumped out, Hellickson and Cobb and Matt Moore and all these guys, and it doesn't seem like there's reinforcements coming. It seems like their window is closing, and certainly Toronto made some moves, and Baltimore is the defending division champion, but Baltimore also lost Nelson Cruz, is a big loss. So the American League East is there to be had, and the Red Sox made a lot of moves, and someone like Rick Porcello really could be poised for a big year. I really like the acquisition of Porcello, and guys like Miley and Masterson. Masterson had a rough year last year, but they're the sorts of guys that can be quietly capable, and everyone talks about the Red Sox needing an ace, but it seems like history shows that not having terrible starters is more important in a lot of ways than having a great starter, at least in the regular season. And the Red Sox have seen that in a couple of recent years, that when they just had nothing as number four or five starters, those are just automatic losses. Whereas, even a guy who's going to give you a 4.5 ERA, that's, six innings, three runs, that keeps you in a game. And if you have, a middle of the lineup with Pedroia, Ortiz, Ramirez, Sandoval, Napoli, all of a sudden you've got something there and you can win some games. So I think, people are cynical about the Red Sox a little bit, in part because they finished last two out of the last 3 years, but they made some decent moves in the offseason. The big thing is that there isn't a dominant team out there. This isn't like the, late 90s, early 2000s Yankees, where they're going to win 100, so you have to win 100 to compete. I mean, you could win, the division winner in the AL East this year might win 88 games. This is not a daunting prospect. And the Red Sox, they have, even though they finished last year, even though they lost what they lost, especially on the pitching side, Lester and Lackey, there's a lot of talent still there, and there's not a lot of talent elsewhere in the AL East.
Well, as a proud Baltimore Orioles fan, all I will say, Brian, is that the American League East and the American League slept on us last year, so what's to say that we won't get overlooked again this year?
Well, that's absolutely true, and I don't mean to say that there is no other contender in the AL East.
No. I know you didn't say anything totally disparaging about the Orioles. It's true, they lost players.
As you would agree, the Orioles certainly are not going to walk over this division. It took a while for them to pull away last year, and yeah, having lost Nelson Cruz, it's a toss-up division. And as you know, as an Orioles fan, this was not a toss-up division in recent years. Like there were, for the last 10, 20 years, it's basically been, the Yankees are going to win the division. And there were times when the Red Sox had a shot, but if you were, Tampa or Baltimore or Toronto, you just knew you weren't going to win the division because, you would have to win 100 games to do it. And now, you know, this Red Sox team having been rebuilt is right there with Baltimore. And, you know, that doesn't mean they're going to win anything, but they can certainly feel more confident knowing they have a pretty decent chance. Unlike these past years where it was just, you know, when you had a juggernaut, when the Yankees were a juggernaut, you know, that just you went into the season, you could do whatever you wanted. You know, that's why the Red Sox, you know, had to go get Curt Schilling and Keith Foulke. And even then, they only won the wild card. You know, when they won the 04 World Series, they came out as a wild card. They still didn't win the division. It wasn't until, you know, 07 when they went and got Josh Beckett that they, and Daisuke Matsuzaka, that they finally won the division. So just more than ever before, certainly in the wild card era, this division's wide open. You know, the Orioles will still be there. The Blue Jays are really intriguing. But the Red Sox have as good a chance as anybody, certainly in this division.
The return of Wieters, Machado, Davis. All I'm going to say is just don't count us out quite yet, Brian. Not quite yet.
Wouldn't you like to be counted out, though? I feel like the Orioles have been counted out three straight years, and they've done okay.
Okay. You can count us out. It's the Red Sox. It's the Boston Red Sox division to win. Brian McPherson of the Providence Journal, thanks so much for taking time to talk to us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.